Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and his mom named him after a brave knight in the Prince Valiant comic strip. He earned a bachelor's degree from Haverford College and a law degree from the University of Michigan Law School. For 35 years, he was one of America's most successful sports agents, and a year ago, he became the vice chairman of Pella Sports and Entertainment. His name? Aaron Tellem. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're with Aaron Tellem, who for the last year has been the vice chairman of Pella Sports and Entertainment. Aaron, welcome to the city, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Okay. I was born and raised in Philadelphia. So grew up in the city. We moved to the suburbs when I was probably in first grade. I grew up in an area called Penn Valley, which is in Lower Merion Township, just outside of Philadelphia. My grandparents had immigrated to this country in the late 1800s, early 1900s from Eastern Europe, Lithuania and Ukraine, to be specific. Very fond memories of my childhood growing up in Philadelphia and a very close family. I'm the first person really in my family ever to leave the Philadelphia area. My summers were spent down the shore in South Jersey. We all did everything together as a family. I have three sisters that are all still live in Philadelphia. Really, when I went to college, went to Haverford College, which was just down the road from where I grew up, I really never thought about leaving the Philadelphia area. My whole world was Philadelphia centric. And when I was in college, after my sophomore year, I took an internship. It was the summer of 1974, which was a historic summer. It was the summer that Nixon resigned. And my interest was really politics. I took an internship with a California congressman who was in the House Judiciary Committee named Jerry Waldie. I went to Washington that summer. And I was summarizing grand jury testimony regarding Watergate. One day, most of the people in the office were from California, and they invited me on a White House tour for students from Berkeley. On the tour, I met my wife-to-be, the White House, and it was my greatest recruiting effort. It took years to finally win her over. Really was through that that my eyes sort of expanded beyond Philadelphia. We had a major negotiation on, as our relationship became serious, where we would work after law school. And I wanted to return to Philadelphia or potentially Washington. And she asked me to look at law firms in California for a summer internship. And I saw this law firm in Los Angeles that was really interesting to me, that was involved in politics. They were very active in Democratic politics. They had one of the larger entertainment practices. And most important, there was a young attorney there named Steve Greenberg, who had played minor league baseball and was now representing baseball players, his old teammates. And he was the son of Hank Greenberg, as we know, of a very famous Detroit Tiger. And in my family, Hank Greenberg was a hero, and my grandparents, I grew up listening to stories of my grandfathers about Hank Greenberg and his importance. And so when I got the offer from that law firm, I decided to take a chance, and I accepted it. Went there for the summer, loved it, and started a relationship with Steve Greenberg. He became my mentor and partner, and probably one of the most important people in shaping my professional career. So Nancy and I decided, after getting the offer after that summer, to settle in Los Angeles. We got married and settled in Los Angeles, and that's where I began my career.
From 82 to 89, Arn, you were general counsel for the LA Clippers.
Right.
Which was owned, I believe, at the time by this infamous...
Donald Sterling.
Tell us about Donald Sterling.
Well, what happened was, that was also another interesting experience. I was 3 years into my job at the law firm working with Steve and another lawyer named Alan Rothenberg, who also became one of my mentors. And Alan was a management attorney at the representing Jack Ken Cook and representing a number of other NBA owners at the time. And one day, so I was sort of, at that stage early in my career, I was working with Steve in baseball, representing baseball players, but also doing management work in basketball, representing some NBA owners. And a friend in the office, knowing my interest in sports, said, "Did you see this ad in the LA Legal Journal?" And I said, "No." And he showed me. It said, and the ad was, "Wanted sports attorney, send your resume to this P.O. box." So I sent it in, didn't know who it was. And a couple weeks later, I got a call back asking me to come in for an interview. And sure enough, it was with Donald Sterling. And this was in May of 82. And at that time, he was in some heat from the NBA. He had tried to move the team from San Diego to Los Angeles. The league had forced him to go back to San Diego. They were threatening to take his team away from him. He needed legal help. And it started a series of conversations, which over the next 3 or 4 months, we met 2 or 3 times in the evening every week. And he offered me to come in-house with him. I really wasn't comfortable going in-house, just throwing my whole life in with him. And at that stage, I enjoyed the law firm. And ultimately, Alan and I represented him. He became a client of the law firm. I became his general counsel. Alan became president of the club. And so by late summer 82, I began this 6-year period of my life where I was still at the law firm representing baseball players and doing some other legal work, but also spending a large percentage of my time representing Donald Sterling and the Clippers. And it was, to say the least, it was a fascinating experience. I learned so much from him. For whatever reason, he believed in me, and he gave me incredible opportunity. And for that, I'll forever be grateful. He just I was involved in all the player end of the team. I saw that firsthand from an ownership perspective. Made a lot of bad decisions, a lot of bad trades, a lot of hiring and firing of coaches, which I was involved in, or at least from a legal end. But I was able to observe and be intimately involved with those decisions, and also the business end of the team, and then his legal. Well, he had a it was just a great training ground for a young lawyer to get incredible experience. Ultimately, we moved back to San Diego, but in 84, 2 years later after I started, we then moved to Los Angeles again. And we were in litigation with the NBA, but this time we were successful because we were able to plan it out and prepare for it. And he let me try a case. It was my first jury trial case, which was in 1984 against the San Diego Sports Arena, which was like a 3-month-long trial, which I did by myself. And everyone thought, and I was up against the president of the San Diego Bar Association, and everyone thought we had a tough case. But I won, and it was a huge victory. And not only did I win, but I won. We were able to get punitive damages against the San Diego Sports Arena. But that trial was pivotal in enabling us to move and leave San Diego and successfully make the move to Los Angeles. But just that case alone, letting me try that case and believing in me, was the type of person that Sterling, the relationship I had with Sterling. He really enabled me to throw myself out there. He believed in me. He gave me great confidence, and I learned so much, good and bad. And the one thing I one of the other things I learned from him is the how that is just, you know, the art of negotiating, and that he wasn't afraid to see it through to the end. And where many people buckled, he wasn't. A lot of times I think he overdid it, but that was part of the education too, was just sort of knowing, you know, how far one can, you know, take an issue. But at the end, it was after 6 years for me, it was a grind. I learned a lot. I realized it was not the right thing for me long term. I really, by 88, our baseball practice was growing. I realized I had no future with Donald Sterling. It wasn't the right. I did not want to work with him forever. I had learned what I could. In 1987, one of my baseball players, Darryl Miller, who was a catcher with the Angels, had a younger brother coming up through at UCLA, was Reggie Miller, and I had the chance to represent Reggie, and the union started regulating agents that same year, and they made a decision that I couldn't represent Reggie while I was a lawyer for an owner of an NBA team. Would be a conflict. So after a long discussion with the union, they made an exception that we could represent Reggie because of our history with the family, but I couldn't represent any other players. And I sort of knew then that after we did Reggie, that I was going to make a decision to become a full-time player representative. So at the end of 88, a year later, I decided to leave the law firm and go out on my own and become a full-time player agent. So I left Sterling. I left the law firm. I was a partner in the law firm. My parents thought I was crazy giving up the security and the peace of mind and the stability of being a partner at a big law firm in Los Angeles. But I really felt that I wanted to have this sense that I could do something on my own, and was prepared to take the risk, which was then a big risk for me because I had no fees as I was leaving. I had a few clients that were going to go with me. The fee of Reggie Miller was going to stay with the law firm. And but I thought, let's just try it and see what happens. And it was clearly the hardest. Also, the hardest part was leaving Steve Greenberg. He was still a part of the firm. And on a personal level, that was very difficult. And then Steve, a year later, ended up leaving himself to go become Deputy Commissioner of Major League Baseball. And today we're still the best of friends.
We're talking to Aaron Tellem. When we come back, we'll ask him about another young 18-year-old that he represented in 1996, the Black Mamba. And I'm Jack Brazil, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula. We're with Aaron Tellem, who from 81 to 2015 was one of the preeminent sports agents in America. 1996, you represent an 18-year-old kid out of Philadelphia High School. Tell us about him.
Well, he grew up in my neighborhood. He grew up in Lower Merion. He went to Lower Merion High School, which was the rival of my high school, Harrington High School, outside of Philadelphia. And his father was a friend. So that's how the relationship began. I knew his father. We were the same age. And I met him. I started talking to his parents that spring, as they were contemplating turning as Kobe was contemplating turning professional. And then high school players were allowed to turn pro. And after a series of meetings, and given our ties and history, they felt comfortable choosing me, which was I was very excited. And it was great. I knew then when I met Kobe that this that I could never have predicted. I knew he could be great. But the one thing that separated him from every athlete that I met was you could see just his mindset was so, at that age, was so, he was so tough, mentally strong, so driven, and he knew that nothing was going to get in his way, that he was going to maximize every ounce of his potential. And his focus and his knowledge, a lot of players talk the game about their awareness of NBA history or players that have come before him, but he was at the age of 17, knew so much about NBA history and had watched so many films and knew players' moves and knew their numbers and knew what career achievements they had accomplished. He was like Tiger Woods was in golf. This Kobe was in basketball.
You pulled some strings. You were instrumental in getting him to the Lakers, LA Lakers.
Right.
How did you do that?
Well, at that time, a couple of things. One was we restricted what teams he worked out for, so very few teams got to see him. And you would have thought, though, everyone knew who he was and knew of his talent. But nevertheless, by restricting who saw him on an individual basis, that a lot of teams just ruled him out. And the second thing was, as it got closer, we communicated with certain teams that he wasn't going to come there or he wouldn't play there, and would try to dissuade teams from picking him. But early on, what helped me was I had him work out quietly and secretly for the Lakers. And the Lakers gave me a commitment that they wanted him, and Jerry West was very high on him. He shut down the workout after like 15 minutes. He saw something immediately in him that he said he hadn't seen other players, and Jerry's often right about players to this day.
Yes.
And Jerry said he would work with me, and so really at the time of the draft, I remember going in because there was a couple of teams that were still interested in taking him, and I knew I had to get him to Charlotte because Charlotte had a prearranged deal with the Lakers where they would trade Vlade Divac for Kobe. And there was a couple of teams that might take him. And I remember talking to Kobe about it one more time to see if he wanted to go through it. And I'll never forget going into his room at right outside the Meadowlands, talking about the draft. And he was lying in bed, and I was sitting in a chair. And he said, "I want to be a Laker. Just get me to Lakers. That's why I hired you. One of the reasons I heard, I knew you could make these kind of things happen."
We're talking to Arm Tellem. Arm, I quote you now. You've said that the movie The Godfather taught you everything you needed to know about being a player's agent. Please.
I was being somewhat facetious, but it has great lines. But but this was one of those moments with Kobe where I used all the powers within me persuade ultimately the Nets not to draft him, and they did at the last minute. I knew if the Nets did not draft him, I think it was with the eighth, I forget it was with the eighth or ninth pick in the draft, that I think it was the eighth pick now, that every team after them up until Short, which was 13, so 9, 10, 11, 12 would pass him based on my ability to persuade, and they did. And when the Nets drafted Curry Kittles, and at the draft, I was at the Bryant family table, and the Kittles were right next to us at their table, and I think they were thinking that we wanted to get drafted by the Nets, and there was this we weren't really talking about it, but when the Nets drafted Kittles, we had a bigger celebration at our table for him going eight than he did, and they remember them looking at us, why were we celebrating for him? And they found out later, I knew then that we were going to be able to accomplish this deal and get Kobe to be a Laker.
We're talking to Arm Tellem. When we come back, we'll ask him about another very famous statement he's made. And I'm Jack Rasulla, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasulla. We're with Aaron Tellem. And Sports Illustrated, Frank Lids, wrote an article May 27th, 2002 that said, started with, "The Iron of the Deal, employing a mix of integrity and absurdity, Aaron Tellem is the strangest of beast, a powerful sports agent you can actually like." And you've said, don't overdo things. When the stronger side tries to impose its will, it makes a big mistake. Ultimately, the stage is set for a payback. Please.
Well, I think my success, so much of it is based on relationships and being able to build a relationship, which is a reflection of trust, first and foremost, building a whoever you're negotiating with trust, that they can trust your word, and understanding, one, understanding their position, being able to put yourself in their shoes, and asking them to put themselves in your shoes to see what issues that you're trying to deal with. And respect, mutual respect. It's based on mutual. Every deal or the relationship is based on mutual respect. So when I made that statement, there are moments where teams, and in my experience as an agent, where they forget that, and when they try to impose their will, because they're in a position where they can take advantage of a negotiating situation, ultimately the mistake they make is that it leads to resentment with the player they're signing, and two, for someone who is in that position receiving that, it sets the stage that sometimes the shoe is on the other foot, and there will be another. In this business, there's always a second time. And it hasn't happened much, but there have been a few moments where the shoe was on the other foot, and you push a little bit harder then, and so because you realize then that's how they look at you, and I would never, that's not how I negotiate. My feeling is that it's I'm in this for the, I've always taken a long term view that I'm going to be dealing with these people along, in many negotiations, and there's going to be, sometimes I'm going to be on the weaker side, sometimes they're going to be on the weaker side, but that we're going to, the negotiation is going to be based on principle. It's going to be based not on personality or ego. It's going to be based on doing what's right, on the merits. And if you can focus the negotiation on that, those moments of paybacks never happen. But there are moments where, and I always view it, I'm going to always test the other side. I'm going to treat them with respect and trust and decency, and it's going to be, they're going to have to show me that they don't reciprocate. And there's been a few moments in my 35 plus years as an agent where those things, that wasn't rare, often, but there was a few moments, and that set the table for, there was a payback down the road.
We're talking to Aaron Tellem, known as a legendary negotiator. For 40 years, Aaron, you've been negotiating with and bargaining with a lady named Nancy Tellem. I know someone who knows the two of you and says, Jack, the one you should have on the show is Nancy, not Aaron.
Yeah.
Tell us about Nancy Tellem.
We've been married now, I think it'll be, 1979, Labor Day, so it'll be 37 years coming up in the next month. We've had, it's been one long negotiation.
Have you ever won?
I don't think I've won many. She is, very smart, great sense of humor. Test me all the time, which I like. I like the fact that she is strong And she's very involved. I mean, the funny thing is, she takes more credit for my success than I do. And she reminds me of all the help she's given me all along the way. So in a lot of the recruiting meetings and dinners we've had with athletes, she was there. And as I built my practice, she was very involved. And she is Superwoman because where for me, it's I get so absorbed in like maybe one aspect, my job. She can be involved in my job, her job, our children's life, manage the house, and do everything. I don't think I could survive without her and get through my daily life without her support. The best part about it is what's made our relationship work, because we're all over the place, and this past year is a great example. I mean, I'm here in Detroit most of the time. She's been in L.A. working, managing a home. She's been in New York working, and she's still coming here. So it's been harder on her, this my coming here, than anybody. But she's made it work, and she has that positive spirit and great attitude that nothing is impossible and that we'll always find a way to make it work. And as for a partner, you can't ask for a better partner, spouse, than someone with that type of attitude. And I love her so much. And I really got the better end of this deal. Trust me.
You outkicked your punt coverage.
Yeah, there's no question.
Nancy Tellem was the second woman in television history to hold the top entertainment post at a major broadcast network. She also headed up a software entertainment division for Microsoft. Yeah. Phenomenal achievements in the business world.
Yeah, and she's now running a tech startup that is very promising. So she's still very busy and active, and she's super. I'm telling you, she's Superwoman. She does it all.
So, when we come back, we'll ask Arn Tellem why, on June 5th, 2015, he leaves this world of sports entertainment, decides to switch sides of the bargaining table, and join Tom Gores. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Arn Tellem, who, when he left as a sports agent, he was representing 42 NBA players, along with a number of baseball players. Those 42 NBA players, the salary for that year was $325 million. After 35 years, Arn, you leave that, you're minting money, and you decide to switch sides of the bargaining table and join Tom Gores as vice chairman of Pella Sports and Entertainment. Why?
when I started out in this business, I was like a big brother to the players. And then I became like their uncle, then their father. And when I became their grandfather recently, I decided, you know what? I've been doing this a long time, and I was open to other possibilities. And a couple years ago, I had met Tom Gores when they were looking originally to buy the team, and some of his people at Platinum. They had come to me for some advice just on labor and contract negotiation and players' salaries as they were doing their due diligence. And a little over a year ago, as we had this relationship, they came back to me a little bit for advice on the coaching decision regarding Stan Van Gundy and what I thought, and I totally endorsed Stan. I thought he was the best coach for them, and he's been terrific for the Pistons. He's helped turn this franchise around, and was a huge part of why I took this job. But really, as I developed this relationship with Tom, it started to turn to would I be ever interested in, you know, coming over. And as I talked to Tom about the potential opportunity, it became really intriguing. One is I had a tremendous respect for Tom and all that he's achieved and just his style, and I felt an incredible bond and personal connection with him and his family. And that was the most important thing to me. And two, as we talked about what the job would entail, it wasn't just a basketball job. It was really representing him and being involved in the community and the strategic initiatives that he sort of saw developing in Detroit and for the Pistons and other business initiatives that he wanted to be involved in. And for me, that opportunity just sounded so fascinating. And I never thought in my wildest dreams, I had opportunities to work with teams before along the way, and my dream was always maybe to go home to Philadelphia, or obviously was comfortable in California. I could maybe work for a team in California. That was always in the back of my mind. Maybe that possibility might occur. I never really thought of Detroit. But as we talked about the opportunity and knowing all the exciting things that were happening here regarding Detroit's revitalization, everything that, you know, Dan Gilbert was doing in the Illich family, I was really inspired. Having gone to law school also, I think, played a part of it, that I was really inspired with what was happening here. And I've always believed, it's my Philadelphia background, I guess, I believe in the underdog. And I wanted to go to a place where I could make an impact. I didn't want to go to a place where it was everything was, where they were, you know, winning a championship or everything was perfect. I wanted to, just like I built my own business, I sort of saw this as the same thing, but on a much greater platform. I could be involved with a team that was on the rise. I could be involved with an organization, and an organization is an incredible platform to be involved in the community. Tom viewed the Pistons as a community asset, and I wanted to help shape that vision of how we engage with the community and how we got involved. And three, to be involved in future business initiatives for Tom, like soccer, that we're involved in, and potentially other investments in Detroit that we could get involved with. That really excited me. And I have to say, since coming here, it's almost, my first day of work was a year ago, the day after Labor Day, so it's almost coming up on the year anniversary when I started here. It's been a fantastic year. I love it in all aspects. And in some, I tell people, in less than a year, I feel more connected to Detroit and its community than I ever did in 30-plus years in L.A. The people are wonderful. There is a true spirit here of trying to bring this great city back. And it's been tremendous for me to be able to participate and make a difference and help Tom execute his vision.
You mentioned the soccer stadium. Tom Gores and Dan Gilbert, in partnership, are trying to get the old half-built jail site on Madison, right by the expressway. Why do we need a soccer team, soccer stadium, and what's the status of that?
Well, first off, it's exciting to have Dan and Tom partner together on this project. I think it's that in alone is a historic achievement to have two powerful and civic-minded owners who are competitors in the NBA come together to bring this opportunity to Detroit. Soccer is a global sport. It attracts a global crowd. Detroit is the largest city in the U.S. without a MLS team. I think if you were at the recent game in Ann Arbor of Chelsea and Real Madrid, and there was 105,000 people there. It was a diverse crowd. It was an exciting moment. It was a real spectacle. It was such enthusiasm for the game. I know it'll be good for Detroit, and Detroit should have it. There's incredible interest here in soccer. Close to 100. It has one of the largest youth participations of any state in the country for soccer. So there is a real demand for it, and all the millennials that are moving downtown, that's their sport. So I think there is a real need, and I know it'll be a success. And the jail site is just a perfect location. The key for success now in soccer is to have a stadium in the inner core of a downtown city, and where people can walk to the game, and then go out and go to pubs before and after the game and enjoy the whole experience. And having it there would be great. The MLS believes it's the perfect site. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to find a way to accommodate the county and the city's needs and be able to build it there. But right now the stages where we're at is we're doing the analysis. Talks are underway with the county. And look, we want to do what's right for the county and the city. And bring soccer here. So we're all working together to make this happen, and hopefully we'll find a way to make it happen so it can be at that site. And right now we're waiting also for the MLS to give us their directions on how the expansion process will work. It's not going to happen immediately. The process will probably get underway this year. And I think the next wave of expansion will be for either 2020 or 2022. But we don't know yet. We're waiting to hear, and we'll probably get those, their parameters and rules and guidelines of how this is all going to work in the next couple months.
You work for Tom Gores. You've been in meetings with Gilbert. You know Mark Cuban, Steve Ballmer, Sterling, you know, these NBA owners, all billionaires. Other than being very rich, what do all of these iconic NBA owners have in common?
I think the unifying thread is they all want to make, they can have incredibly easy lives and comfortable lives, but all of them, and I would say in particular, I know Dan now very well, and obviously Tom, they all want to do right by their community. It's more than just winning games. That's a huge part of it, is having a team and the fun of owning a team. But clearly they understand the importance of the connection between the team and the community that it plays in. And Dan, being from Detroit, has the interest in Detroit's well-being. But they all have this sense of responsibility that sports is a great platform to do social good for the community and bring people together. It's an incredible unifier. And I think they see that, and that's what they want to do for Detroit, like here, what we want to do for Detroit. And that's what Tom's vision is. So whether it's doing good in this community in Detroit, whether it's helping his hometown of Flint, the Pistons are an incredible platform to be able to bring attention, awareness to issues, and for us to meet our responsibilities as a corporate citizen to play a real role in whether it's Flint or Detroit, and play an important role and make a positive impact in the community. And that's our goal. And that's Tom's goal.
Arne Tellem, from all of us at Southeast Michigan, thanks for leaving Tinseltown, coming to Detroit. We're better for it.
No, thank you very much. I love being here, and it's been really one of the greatest chapters of my life being here. I thank you, and I thank Tom most of all for giving me this opportunity.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahn. Believe in yourself.